if someone else didn't have it, would I still want it? If I didn't see Jace's awesome Xbox, would I still want it? I don't know.
If you're happy with the same old ways of dating,
if you enjoy sucking at communication,
and you have no desire to improve your romantic life, then our podcast might not be for you.
But if you want some out-of-the-box ideas to deepen your current relationships,
broaden your sexual horizons,
develop a better understanding of yourself,
or learn more about non-monogamy,
then you've come to the right place. I'm Jace.
I'm Emily.
And I'm Dedeker.
And this is the Multiamory Podcast.
Songs I know I did. Forcing me to form myself to fit.
So we want to take a quick moment to talk to you guys about Shakespeare. I don't think we've talked about Shakespeare on the podcast before, have we?
I don't think we
have. That's like uncovered territory. That's a shame. I really like Shakespeare.
I mean, you know, he's kind of historically important, so I guess it would be a good thing to talk about. Actually, you know, we have talked about Shakespeare.
Hmm.
We've talked about Shakespeare specifically in the way that it upholds a lot of these ideas that jealousy equals love.
Right.
Stuff like that.
And jealousy means you can kill somebody.
Exactly. Yeah. And that it's okay because it's love, right?
Good old Shakespeare. Well, speaking of, we want to talk to you about a new play called 50 Shades of Shakespeare that's being put on by some friends of ours in Hollywood.
Yeah, so we typically see Shakespeare produced through this very heteronormative straight white male meets straight white female lens.
Or straight white male meets straight white female being played by straight white male.
Well, sure, historically, yes.
Yes.
But this show aims to widen that perspective.
Yeah, so each night of the show, it features two women, two men, and there's 9 scenes drawn from Shakespeare that are about love, sex, you know, and everything in between, you know, stuff from Romeo and Juliet, Othello,
bunch
everything
of other
else.
Stuff,
yeah.
But here's the catch. At the top of each show, they randomly draw which actors will play which roles. So it's not always going to be male, female in those scenes or in those different roles. And what's really cool about it is that because it's random, all of these actors know all the parts and can play all of them, which is also impressive and fun.
So it's kind of nice, you know, taking these really traditional, famous literary scenes and kind of turning them on their head a little bit and seeing which different dynamics come out when you do switch the gender roles that are in each scene.
But when this episode comes out, there's only 4 shows left, only 4 chances left for you to go see it. And we've worked out a promo for you guys to get a discount if you use our promo code. So these shows are at the 3 of Clubs, which is in Hollywood, and the shows are on May 3rd and 4th of 2017, May 3rd and 4th at 10 p.m., May 7th at 8 p.m., and May 10th at 10 p.m. And if you want to get tickets, you can go to multiamory.com/50shades, that's 50 shades, 50 shades, and click the link there to buy tickets. And if you use the promo code MULTIAMORY, the whole thing spelled out, you get $7 off your ticket, which is basically half price.
Mm-hmm.
So pretty sweet. And it's at a bar, so you can drink, have fun, and watch silly, gender-swapped, non-heteronormative Shakespeare.
Yeah, so go out, support local theater, and as a bonus, you may get your hands on a very special edition Multiamory condom that's going to be at the show? Question mark?
Yeah, at least some condom packaging with some Multiamory branding on it. Yeah, we're really excited to support this show and hope that you guys do too.
Great, so see you guys there, and now, on to the episode.
On this episode of the Multiamory Podcast, we're talking about the things that we want that we don't actually want.
Great.
We're digging into the things that we're socialized to want or perhaps peer pressured to think that we want that may not actually be based in our true desires in ourselves.
So I believe that this episode was inspired by the best-selling blog post by one Jace Lindgren,
the male-bodied human of our group.
The token male of Multiamory.
He is a token male.
Aptly titled, I Want What I Don't Want. Is that correct? Have you read that one? Are you familiar with his work?
I'm quite familiar with his work, actually, yeah. I was just watching the hit series Behind the Blog, where they were kind of doing
expose. Oh, wow. Like kind of like a Behind the Music style.
Correct.
Yes. Yeah.
Is that even around anymore?
Behind the Music?
Yeah.
I have no idea.
I don't know either.
What was that on MTV or the VH1?
I thought it was on the first VH. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
God, we are kooky today, guys.
Yeah, we are. And it's surprising we're so kooky because this can be a pretty heavy topic. Because I think certainly. That the more academic title that I would love to title this, but I know that the twos of you won't let me title it, is Deconstructing Desire.
Oh, come on. You can't deconstruct everything.
Yes, you can. I love deconstructing.
Deconstructing jealousy. I mean, you can. You just can't title things.
I know. That's true. We already did the deconstructing one. But I think that...
But it is a good title.
Yes. Though. Obviously, if you go to someone and let's talk about deconstructing your desires, that sounds a little...
Like a snooze fest to me.
No, I appreciate it. I mean, I just appreciate this topic at all simply because... We so often don't think about why we want things. Yeah. We just are like, yeah, my desire is there, obviously. I'm going to go after it, or I'm going to be envious of someone else who has it. So yeah. I appreciate the fact that we consistently are asking people to think about what they want and why they want it.
Because the starting point of so many conversations we have about relationships is like, well, are you getting what you want? Are you getting what you need? Like, what kind of relationship do you want? What kind of partner do you want? And it's kind of like this next step of like, well, why do you want that?
Yeah. Right.
You know, and before we dive into this, I want to reiterate for our listeners that this process is not necessarily a process of getting you to give up on the things that you want. Like, we're not here trying to convince you that everything that you want is a lie and is bullshit and isn't real or isn't valid. Right. But there
just is... Just a question.
Yeah, it's just a question. Like, there can be so much value just in questioning, just in kind of picking apart, what is it that makes me tick? What is it that makes me want this?
Right. And even if the conclusion of it is that you do really want that thing, it may still give you some insight into...
The reasonings behind it.
Yeah, and kind of like what are the most important parts of it and things like that.
Yeah.
Which can actually help you to get the things that you want. Instead of just, you know, becoming an ascetic and not having anything.
And having no desires.
Yeah.
Not even desiring to have no desire.
Exactly.
Yeah. That's the whole Buddhist paradox.
Yeah, exactly.
So what are we driven by?
Yeah, so what is the engine that tends to produce... Our wants.
Right. Well, we've got three
outside of the base, like, you know, Maslow's hierarchy of needs.
Sure.
Biological wants.
Right. So we've broken this down into three kind of major categories that we felt these fit into the best. So Emily, do you want to start us off with our first one?
So the first one is going to be comparison to people's things or achievements.
To other people's things.
Correct.
Right?
Yeah.
So that one's a bitch.
Well, yeah, so Jace has his really cool Xbox One, and I'm like, you know, Jace must be super wealthy or super well off because he has that Xbox One. I want that thing.
Sure, I mean, even just on the surface, even just looking at another person's life like that.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, I think it's pretty typical for someone to look at another person and go, man, you know what? Like, they just seem to have it all together.
Yeah.
Right? That's that thing of comparison that when you're looking at someone else, you're not seeing all the little nitty-gritties that you see for yourself. But this can also lead us, like in Emily's example, if, you know, she's like, man, Jace has an Xbox. I really want that. And the thing that we want to get to here is kind of the question of, do you actually want an Xbox? Or do you just want one because I do? Or maybe you want one a little bit, but there's actually a bunch of other things you'd like more than that.
Like a Nintendo Switch.
Right.
Actually, I have one of those, so whatever. Yes.
Totally. So you're fulfilled and satisfied.
Yes, I am.
Yeah.
Well, I think that... Obviously, it can be any number of things that we want just because other people have them. You know, possessions. You know, it's very easy to just be like, yeah, possessions or money or particular clothes or things like that. But to bring it into the realm of relationships and dating and sex, which is our specialty, I think this can come up a lot in multi-partner relationships, specifically in the arena of like, oh, like my partner's going on more dates than I am.
Yeah.
And I want that too. My partner has more partners than I do. I want that too.
Or my partner has more fulfilling relationships at this time that have been longer term or that they're getting a lot of fulfillment out of. I want that too.
Right. Yeah, or they've had more first dates and I've had more like long-standing dates and I'm jealous of their first dates or vice versa.
Exactly.
Something that I do want to clarify though before we go too much further is that like with the example of the Xbox, it's not to say that like, oh, if you really analyze it, you'll realize that like you don't actually want an Xbox at all.
Sure.
That it's not about that so much. because maybe you do want to be going on more dates or something like that. It's more about how badly do you want a thing and how much happiness would that thing bring you? Whether it is more dates or whether it's an Xbox or whether it's more partners or money or possessions or whatever.
Yeah.
Because it makes me think of something that I remember my mom telling me about. She was reading a book about like how to teach your kids to be better with money.
Mm.
And one of the... she read that a little too late.
I know, I was like, God, I need to read that book.
Yeah, right. No, it actually was really helpful for me even, because I think I was in high school by the time she was reading this and talking to me about it. But she was saying that one of the things in it was, you know, if your kid is, you're at the store with your kid, and the kid's like, oh, I want this thing, that a lot of people will say to their kid, oh, we can't afford that.
Hmm.
We can't afford that thing. And that's not always true. Like, maybe you could afford that thing. So what this book, and it also gets this idea that if you could afford it, you would get it.
Interesting.
Is the idea of like, if I may, you were so focused on whether you could, you didn't stop to think about whether you should.
Oh my God.
What is that from?
That's Jeff Goldblum from Jurassic Park.
Oh, yeah.
You didn't give the right delivery. It should have been like, you were so focused on whether or not, on like, whether or not you could, that you didn't stop to think about whether or not you should. There, that one.
That was good.
Thank you,
Jeff.
And
you're taking it and slapping it on Lunchback and your Lunchbox. Let me try
cookie,
that again.
Cookie,
you're
cookie.
Taking it and you're slapping it on Lunchbox and you're selling it. You're selling it.
You're selling it. You're selling
okay,
it.
Sorry. Okay. Thank you for the Goldblum break.
Yes. What I was trying to get at, though, is that what this book suggested was instead saying is sort of imparting to your kids the idea that we have a certain amount of money and we're going to choose not to spend it on that because we'd rather spend it on these other things.
Interesting.
Like food.
So what?
Or rent or, you know.
Well, so what?
But it's basically that difference between not ability to afford, but choice to afford something.
But choice to afford. Like priorities.
And I think that applies with a lot of stuff in our life, actually, not just money.
Yeah.
I think money just tends to be the one where we get the most kind of...
Well, we get instant gratification from buying something.
Well, sure. And also because our society is so averse to talking about money in a very frank, matter-of-fact way, that I think that's, you know, a good example of one that people don't even realize they might be, you know, giving their kids, inadvertently giving their kids the lesson that if they could afford something, they should.
Yeah.
And you see this a lot of times when kids get their first, like, job out of college or out of high school or whatever, and all of a sudden they have money, and they just waste it all because they can afford things because it's focused on ability.
Sure.
Interesting.
And so now taking about this to relationships of, like, number of dates or number of partners, it's the same, or even possessions.
You should waste your money and time on humans, even if you don't really want to. No, I'm kidding. I'm just giving an example.
Right, but the idea is, like, If it's a question of whether you can, this also happens. Like, this was the argument that Tiger Woods gave about having an affair in his marriage.
Because he could?
Because he could.
Because he was a dorky, nerdy golf kid growing up, and that once he was this superstar, I remember, this was so many years ago now, but there was some interview where it was either someone kind of speculating on interpreting something that he'd said or something he'd said himself of just sort of like, I'd never had those opportunities, or, you know, that he'd never had those opportunities. Mm-hmm. So now that he did have them, it was like, well, I can't say no to these things because I have the option to be with people I never thought I could.
That's interesting, because I feel like that comes up for a lot of people, especially with sex, I think.
Yeah.
Because I have always felt that the day that you have the ability to say no to sex... To know to sex with someone that you're attracted to, but who isn't right, or like the time's not right, or it's not going to be like a healthy or not a good choice. But having the ability to still say no to it, I think actually is a sign of great maturity.
Yeah, sure. And that's empowerment right there.
Yeah.
But it's a hard thing to do.
Yeah. For sure.
And especially if you were someone who didn't think it was a thing you could get.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I think that brings us to the next one, actually, because the next category of, I guess, the things that drive our desires is, I think, very much how we've been socialized.
For sure.
You know, a lot of our wants have been beaten into us by our culture, rather than actually being something that came from within us.
Yeah.
You could probably argue that the majority of our wants come from our context and our environment rather than...
Sure.
From what's truly within us.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think the most obvious example of this is in the way we socialize different genders.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I know that we've talked about this on the podcast before, and Jace, you mentioned this in your blog post, but about wanting sex.
Right. Yeah.
You know, we often socialize people who are born female mm-hmm. that they shouldn't want sex or that they don't want sex or that they're not the people who want sex. And we socialize men, like little boys, into thinking that... No, you do want sex. Like, sex is what drives you, and you should go after it all the time.
Yeah, and to take it a step further, women are told that they're slutty if they do have sex, and so that makes us maybe not, you know, subconsciously at least, not want to have it, because we view ourselves as slutty if we are.
Yeah.
And then on the flip side, men are told they should be having sex all the time, and they're the conquerors, and they're the ones who, you know, are going to be these great... people. Yes.
Well, no, and that's why I think specifically with men, like whenever I see men who are able to turn down sex, if it's not going to be like good sex, or it's not going to be healthy, or it's not ethical, or it's not actually something that somebody they actually want to sleep with.
Yeah.
If they're still able to say no to that person, like that's actually, sadly enough, like I feel like that's actually an achievement. I think that's actually a benchmark, because I feel like I've known so many people, usually men, not always men, but usually men, who just cannot say no if sex is on the table.
Fascinating.
You know, even if it's like, I'm not actually attracted to this person, or this is not a good situation to get into.
Just because this they're told that they should be having sex all the time.
But men are told that, like...
Well, I would say it's more like we were talking about before, that they never thought they could get it, and it was something they were told you should want. So now that you can get it, right, like you can...
You should just take it at every opportunity.
The only reason why you haven't been having sex before is because you couldn't. So now that you could...
Like, you have to go after it.
Do it constantly.
Again, with the whole metaphor of not being able to afford things versus choosing to buy things, right? It's that same... That same mentality.
Well, so for
Well, I was gonna say on the flip side for women.
Well, for women, we're told that we want to have kids.
Yeah, we're told we want commitment.
Want commitment.
And the implication in that is like, as in a committed husband.
Yeah,
who's gonna take care of you and not fool around on you and be there to be the father of your children.
Sure,
and make a home with you.
I mean, I was gonna say specifically that women want kids and that they should want kids and that they're we're tied up basically. We're a good person or a good human being as a female human being if you decide to have kids.
Well, it's not just women, but men also.
Sure. That's true. There's a lot of stuff dealing with men.
Also kind of socialized to think like, no, this is a good thing. Like, passing on your name is a good thing. Like, this is something that you should do. And we can apply this to so many things. I mean, I think that a lot of people who do delve into the realm of non-traditional or alternative relationships have already taken the first step of like questioning the things that are programmed into us as far as our wants are, because obviously we're so programmed into wanting monogamy. And wanting a partner, a single partner who's going to devote themselves entirely to us and nobody else. And that programming is so intense that that's why we spend so much time figuring out ways to get through jealousy and to deprogram jealousy to a certain extent.
And I think another example of this kind of thing is in wanting a home, specifically a house. I actually think home is a little misleading, because home is where the heart is.
Well, but
a house is where the mortgage is.
But they call them homeowners. They don't call them house owners.
That's true.
Well,
because a home is the thing. It's the structure in which a person lives.
Home is what you make.
You're right, but they do call them homeowners and houses.
Yeah, I know, right?
Well, I don't know. There's no reasoning behind that. Anyways,
What I was getting to, though, is that with wanting to own a home specifically, not to rent, but to own, is a very common thing that I was raised to want. I see this with a lot of my friends. And it's an interesting one, because there are some people who do get a lot of fulfillment and joy and happiness out of that. But I've seen personally a lot of people who it's mostly a source of stress.
My
mother, damn.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, my best friend is now in even more debt after fixing up his home, like redoing the foundation and stuff, right? That it's like,
I really feel like the more people I talk to about it, it feels like a 50-50.
Yeah.
It feels like 50% of people are really like, no, love it. Like, love our home. It's been great.
Love
having
it.
Love the investment. Love the whole process. And other people are like,
why did we do this?
Well,
this
it can be a money pit.
Idea. Seriously.
After a while. Yeah. Truly. I mean, unfortunately, in this day and age, I mean, we're finally climbing out of the giant bubble that burst in 2008, but it's not really...
It's still not back to full strength.
Well, yeah, and you know, my mother put a ton of money into her home and then barely got anything out of it. And she bought it right when the bubble was huge, and then it collapsed and everything went to shit. So,
well, and even if you're not doing that, like in the book Rich Dad Poor Dad, one of his sort of axioms is that what defines people who are middle class but can't get to that upper class in terms of income, like upper income, is that they acquire liabilities that they think are assets.
Such as
a home.
And his example is a home that you live in. Because he's really big on owning rental properties. Yeah. He's like, but a home that you live in, like, yes, maybe in certain situations you could argue that it's less of a liability than renting in terms of you're getting a little more of your money back or something. He's like, but that whole idea that your home is your biggest investment, he
so
like really is like,
that.
That's completely false because you're living in it. So you're paying money to maintain it. So it's actually a thing that's taking more money than it's giving you.
Maybe it's taking less than renting.
You could make that argument. That really depends on other things, but just that it's not truly an investment.
But if you have to spend $15,000 on redoing your roof, like, then there you go.
Yeah, exactly.
That's years of rent.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's true. Anyways.
So the last one that we feel drives our desires often is this idea of projecting happiness onto either someone or something or some time or some event in the future.
Yeah.
And this is a concept that gets talked about, I think, a fair amount, this idea of kind of like postponing your happiness and this idea of like, well, when I get this thing, or when I am in a relationship with this person, or when my relationship looks this way, or when I'm dating this many partners, or when I do buy that house, or when I do move away, or when I do take this vacation, like, then I'll be happy.
Right.
And often we aren't.
Yeah.
Because we kind of...
We're so sad, pathetic creatures.
Yeah, we kind of...
I'm sorry. No, I'm kidding. I'm just not feeling great right now.
Emily's not feeling great. So everything's
Everything's awful. We're in a dark world of sadness and pain.
Exactly.
Well, but I think we can very easily get into that mental habit of that happiness is always over the horizon, and it's always going to be over the horizon.
Yeah.
And again, we could go super extensive and broad with this, but just to look at this in the context of our relationships, it could be something like, once this relationship is finally like emotionally committed, then I'll be happy. Once we're finally living together, once we're finally married, then I'll be happy. Or if I could just have some casual sex relationships, then I'll be happy. Or if I could go back to monogamy, I'll be happy. Or
once
like
I could finally start having group sex, then I'll be satisfied or something.
Or once we're fully polyamorous and open, then I'll be happy. Or what, you know, it could be anything, like fill in the blank on any of it. But I think that's an interesting one of like whatever it is out in front of you. I think it's not bad to have something to look forward to and to have goals and to have things that are keeping you moving forward, but sometimes you can be sacrificing your happiness and fulfillment in the moment.
Totally. And your self-peace.
Yeah, the carrot that's in front of you, that's perpetually in front of you.
Right, and that's exactly the problem, that it is perpetually in front of you. And this makes me think of how in interviews, Oprah has talked about how the most like depressing and unsatisfying time in her life was at the time when all of us would see as the height of her career. Like the height of the O magazine and the Oprah Network and like all of that.
Yeah.
Because it was that she was achieving.
Yeah.
But there's always that next thing to do, and she kind of reached this pinnacle of just like, what's the next thing I can do? Because her happiness was so based in trying to accomplish goals.
Yeah.
And that led to her really rethinking that and changing the way she looked at her happiness and what it is that made her happy.
Yeah, no, my mother and I were talking about this with the technology that we have. Apparently, like, Facebook does apps. Like Instagram, they'll compile all of the likes and then give it to you at the same time so that it looks like you're getting a ton at once.
Interesting.
And also like on my watch, for example, my iWatch, like every week it tells me like, okay, you achieved your goal 7 days this week. So up your goal. And then it's like, well, I'm always upping it, so I'm always trying to find this unattainable thing eventually.
Right.
And just stupid shit like that.
That's why I never liked Tetris.
Yeah, you're right. There's no end in sight. Yeah, games that have no end in sight. That's why I like Legend of Zelda. But
you know what, though? Here's the ironic thing, though, about Tetris, is I would actually argue, though, that the person who does find joy in Tetris is the one who is more
who's
okay
more
with
in the moment.
They love
yeah,
the process.
Right. They're more about the journey than the destination. Right.
And that's
there is no destination in Tetris.
There is no destination.
You're right. I mean, you don't need a goal, like, because that's the point, I guess, is that, like, sometimes your goals are not the thing that makes you happy.
Right. And so, anyway, I really struggled with Tetris because of that, because
that's
I
so
wanted
funny.
A goal
you
to
wanted
finish.
A goal.
But I do think there is something really interesting to letting go of that and being in the moment and just enjoying that process. And it's not always easy, but...
Let's take a moment.
Yes.
To be in the moment.
You've worked hard for what you have. Your money, your assets, your 401k, and home. Isn't it all worth protecting? Nearly one in four consumers have been a victim of identity theft. LifeLock Ultimate Plus helps protect your finances with up to $3 million in reimbursement. LifeLock alerts you to identity threats you might miss. And if your identity is stolen, your dedicated U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. Let LifeLock help protect what you've worked so hard for. Save 25% off your first year on LifeLock Ultimate Plus at LifeLock.com/aware. Terms apply.
For a long time now, we've been fans of AdamandEve.com for getting sex toys or lingerie or accessories, things like that. It's just a fantastic resource with a huge selection. And now, not only do we have a fantastic offer, but we also have a promo code that will work on adammail.com and evestoys.com, which are their sites specifically for LGBTQ audiences. And our code is fantastic. It's 50% off of almost any item in the store and free discreet shipping when you use our code MULTI.
Yes, we love AdamandEve.com and have for years. They are our oldest and longest sponsor, and they just keep on giving great gifts to us and to our listeners. You can bring more pleasure and satisfaction into your bedroom by going to AdamandEve.com, AdamMail.com, or EvesToys.com and select any one item. It can be, you know, an adventurous new toy or anything you desire, something fun, something sexy, whatever sounds good.
So just enter offer code MULTI at checkout and you'll get 50% off almost any item plus free shipping. That's MULTI, M-U-L-T-I at AdamandEve.com, AdamMail.com, or EvesToys.com. This is an exclusive offer that is specific to this podcast and it's better than any offer that is currently available on their site. So again, use code MULTI to get you not just the 50% discount, but also the 100% free shipping. Code M-U-L-T-I.
Okay, so this process of deconstructing one's desires, I mean, I feel like over the course of my life, it's just been, I think for some people, it can be a very organic process of just as they get older, as they get more life experience, it starts to kind of chip away at like, well, I tried that and like turns out, no, that actually wasn't what I wanted. Mm-hmm. And I tried that and oh, actually I wasn't that happy. I tried this and oh, and it did make me happy. Okay, so that's a clue. You know, mm-hmm. that through our lives, we can have this very organic trial and error period, essentially of figuring out what it is that we truly want. However, we do think that there can be some very powerful self-inquiry questions mm-hmm. to pose to yourself that can help you start to kind of get into this process a little bit faster mm-hmm. of figuring out, like, do I actually want this? Or is this just kind of because of my context or because of the people that are around me or,
right.
you know, any other reason?
Yeah. Or do I maybe want this in a slightly different way than I think mm-hmm. I do right now?
Mm-hmm.
So let's go through these.
Yeah, and so the first one is going to be if there's something that you want that is making you upset by not having it.
That's like the cue, right?
Yes, so
like,
exactly.
Yeah. Let's question this.
It's like, yeah, so
there's something that I want and I'm upset about it because I don't have that thing.
Yeah, and that doesn't necessarily mean that it's bad. Like,
right.
this is just like sure. something just to notice.
Yeah.
Like, notice it as a cue. Notice it as the seed.
Yeah, something that's...
That's a whole other episode.
Uh-huh.
So an easy example of this was last summer when Jason and I were in Osaka. Yeah. I was in the middle of like total crunch time working on the book because my manuscript was due. I was mm-hmm. in total crunch time studying for the JLPT test
because yeah.
it was the test was like 2 days after my manuscript was due. Like
yeah.
it was a crazy, crazy time.
Right.
And Jason and I met up and we were going to work together. we were talking about, you know, what we've been up to recently, and mm-hmm. Jace mentioned that, like, the night before he'd gone out, like, drinking, like, went out to a club and had met, like, a girl, and they had a great time, and they went back home together, and, like, was talking about his night, and that this very much happened, where, like, there was something that I thought that I wanted that was making me upset by not having it, that immediately I was like, well, I want that. Like, yeah. I want to be having fun and, like, going out to clubs and, like, meeting random sexy strangers and, like, taking them back home with me. Like, I want that, you know? And so it was a weird mix of, like, envy and jealousy. Uh-huh. And yeah, so, like, there was that seed where I was, like, I was upset by not having that.
And it's funny because it makes me laugh now, because the thought of Dedeker going to a club is...
Okay, well, we're getting ahead of the game here. We're getting ahead of the game.
That's the difference
between... That's a big difference.
It's like a big difference. To a club.
There's very little actual dancing that happens at clubs.
yeah.
Anyway, let's continue on with the thought exercise here.
Okay.
Oh, are you going to, like, go step by step as we go through this?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, I thought you were going to tell us the whole process right
there. No. This is
just
the example.
I see. Yeah.
Okay.
So, okay. How would you feel if you got this thing as number two?
Yeah. So... if I'm putting myself in that moment, you know, when I, because I was thinking like, okay, well, actually, what is it that I want to feel, you know, in going out to a club and dancing with people and picking up someone and flirting with someone and having sex with someone new. And let's see, if I was going to answer that question, it would be like, I wanted to feel desired and wanted to feel like I was having fun and like I was relaxed and, you know, that I was sexually fulfilled or adventurous. Like those are kind of the feelings that I was going for in wanting that thing also.
Yeah.
Well, okay. So I do want to clarify something here. We had originally written this as how would you feel if you got that thing?
But you just said how you wanted to feel.
But you were answering the question of what do you want to feel? Mm-hmm. Like, what is it that you want to feel by getting that thing?
But because, in reality, but both, there's a difference.
Well, but both are important to ask.
Yeah.
Both are important to ask because... you know, how do you want to feel is what you just described, right?
Yeah.
You wanted to feel desired. You wanted to have fun, which you weren't having a lot of fun at that time in your life.
Yeah.
Right? You weren't having
a lot
of free time.
You were doing a lot of work.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Right? But then the other flip side of that is how would you feel if you got that thing? In your case, it would be like, I feel claustrophobic at this club. I think I feel unsatisfied by the music that's at this club. I would imagine, right? Like,
well, that's kind of twofold, right? Is that like... I want to feel those things, and I think that if I do that, I'm going to feel those things.
Right.
Versus, like, in reality, if I did that, how I might actually feel. Yeah. I guess it's a subtle difference.
Well, because I would like to give my example for this is with going on new dates. So, like, Dedeker has recently, you know, in the past couple months or whatever, had a couple, like, new dates, like, first date type things or haven't seen someone in a long time kind of dates. And... at first, I found myself being like, man, I'm jealous. Like, I wish I had more first dates. Maybe I could find those. Like, there are some people I'm interested in. Maybe I could pursue that. And it was, you know, making me feel uncomfortable, which was the first cue. And then I went on to step number two, which is that, you know, how would I feel, you know, how do I want to feel? Like, I want to feel desired. I want to feel like I'm exploring something new, all of that. But then when I asked the other question of how would I feel if I got this thing, when I actually thought about that, I was like, oh, man, I'm leaving in like 3 weeks. I would feel really stressed trying to schedule them in there. I would feel stressed about doing that while also seeing all the people I want to see before I start traveling, packing up my stuff. Like when I thought about it, I was like, ugh, actually, like, I don't think I would feel great.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I think it's important to ask both questions.
Sure.
Because in that case, it's like, yeah, the stuff I wanted to feel, it's like, yeah, I probably would have felt those things, but I also would have felt all this other stuff that you kind of tend to forget about.
Yeah.
So, okay, the next one. If someone else didn't have it, would I still want it? If I didn't see Jace's awesome Xbox, would I still want it? I don't know.
I like that you brought it back to the Xbox.
Well, definitely in my situation, then it was like if Jace hadn't gone out and had a fun night, or if he hadn't even talked to me about it, or if he hadn't talked to me about it in detail, like, would I still want it? Probably not.
Yeah.
You know, I probably wouldn't have even had the thought of like, oh, I want to go out into a club and like hook up with someone random. Like, you know, so it was just kind of like because it was presented to me that I wanted it. And I think this is the reason why social media can be so depressing for us sometimes.
Tell me about it.
Is because it's like things we didn't even realize that we wanted until we saw it on somebody else's Facebook feed. You know, some kind of achievement or some kind of status or some kind of possession that we were totally fine when it was out of sight, out of mind. And then once once it's there, then we're like, fuck, I want that thing.
Yeah.
No, I've definitely found that with the date thing, like I was talking about. Mm-hmm. But this is also one that has come up for me a lot with work. And I mentioned this in the blog in terms of I work in visual effects. And one of the things I really like about my job right now, freelancing, is that I have lots of free time because I'm not working 80 hours a week.
Yeah.
Or at the company I used to work for, we worked normal 40-hour weeks. But I'm not having to work these, you know, realistically, like 60, 70-hour weeks that people who work on, like, Marvel movies and stuff have to do. But when I see a friend post that they just got a job on some Marvel movie, I'm always like, I wish I could do that. And then I have to take that step back and be like, wait a minute. I don't, though. Like, I've actually very consciously chosen not to have that thing.
Yeah. I guess it's a little bit like FOMO. You know, like the fear of missing out. Yeah, because you know someone else is doing this thing. And then the last thing, and I think this is the real kicker, is asking yourself, could these desires or these feelings that I want to have be fulfilled by something else?
Yeah.
By something else other than what it is that I think that I want? Like, are there any different avenues to feeling that way? I know in my own life, the question of kids has come up, you know, and as I've evaluated, like, why do I want this? What would I want to get out of this? What are the ways I would want to feel? And I found that, you know, the things that I do feel positively about are like, you know, being a part of a child's life and being able to help influence a child growing up and being able to, you know, protect a child and kind of create a family. And I discovered that definitely through being an auntie very much. But then realizing, but I don't need to be a mom to actually fulfill that. Like, I'm happy to be an auntie. Or someday, if I have a partner who has children or wants to have children with another partner, like, I don't mind being a part of that. You know, that I could be fulfilled in that way. That's not like I have to
sire
a child. I don't think women can sire children.
No, you're right. The sire in the horse realm is the male.
The dude.
Correct.
The dude horse.
The dude horse. That is the technically correct equine terminology. Yes.
Ridiculous.
The dude horse.
Looks like a bro.
Wait, what's a dude ranch?
Well, that's where there's only male horses.
No, isn't
a stud ranch?
Idiot. No.
Is a dude ranch a thing, or am I confusing it with stud ranch?
It is an actual thing. My mother will kill me that I don't know this offhand, but it's like. Dude Ranch. Keep going and I'll tell you in a moment.
Okay.
And that's
okay,
where we end the episode, is talking about horses.
Yes. Right. So with this question of are there different ways to feel that, I found I've had a similar thing with children, of being like, I like the idea of being part of shaping a child's way of thinking and, you know, being there and supporting a child growing up. But that realizing that for me, the stuff that's really fulfilling when I think about that is not necessarily having my own. And that
you
was a hard
a teacher.
Thing. Yeah, a teacher, that was actually something I was thinking about doing for quite a while.
Yeah.
But that there are other ways to get to that. And that was a hard one to let go of because of how strongly it had been socialized into me and
how much pressure my family put on it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And that was a hard thing to kind of take the steps back and be like, why do I want this thing? And I realized it was more like, I felt like I needed to check that box, or maybe that I thought that was the only way that I could get that experience of, you know, of raising a kid or being part of that. But then in really thinking about it more and like looking into it more and seeing, you know, other people with children and deciding what my priorities are in my life, deciding that that's actually not something that I want to have in my own life, but that I do really want to support someone else in doing. Whether it's a partner or a friend or a sibling or whatever.
So I think in asking yourself these questions, don't be afraid to revisit this often with something that you want. And it could be with small wants or big, you know, life-spanning desires. You know, don't be afraid to constantly check back in, like, do I still want this? Is, you know, what are my reasons for wanting this? Is this still going to make me satisfied? Or can it be satisfied in other ways? And what I'm hoping that people get out of this is the sense that, like, if you go through all of these kind of inquiry questions and still find that you want that thing, like, that's great. Like, that just has clarified for you more, no, I really do want this thing and I can take steps towards that. Or it's helped expand your awareness and your possibilities. and maybe helped you find a little more flexibility in your life as far as what will fulfill you. So what's a dude ranch?
It is a guest ranch, also known as a dude ranch. It's a type of ranch oriented towards visitors or tourism.
So it's like a ranch.
It's a considered a resort. Form of agora tourism.
Agro-tourism.
Not agora.
Agro-tourism. It's agro-tourism. Like angry tourism. I'm just agro all the time.
Like agricultural? Or
I'm assuming, yes.
Interesting. Yeah.
Well, that makes
sense. It's also a studio album by the American pop punk band Blink-182.
Oh.
But it makes me think of Hey Dude from Nickelodeon back in the day.
What?
I think you guys might have been too young.
Hey
but
Dude?
For those of our listeners out there who are in their 30s, you will remember Hey Dude. Which was a show on Nickelodeon, but where all of the characters were people who worked at a dude ranch, and there were always guests coming in, and I never put that together.
Wow.
But that makes a lot of sense.
Well,
you could have answered this question.
I could have, but I didn't know that I could.
So now that we've made everyone want to go to a dude ranch, you should evaluate
whether or not you really want to fulfill your career being a dude on a dude ranch.
Yes.
Yeah.
All right.
Anyway.
Well, thank you all so much. We hope that you got something out of this. I know this has been an ongoing process for all of us and something that we still think about and mm-hmm. talk to each other about a lot. And hopefully this is something that can be helpful for you too in your relationships.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you everybody so much. And we'll see you next week.
And you can find us at multiamory.com.
Uh-huh.
You can find us on Twitter at multiamory. You can find us on Instagram at multiamory_podcast. Or you can email us.
Our email address is info@multiamory.com. Thank you all so much. And we'll see you next week.
Bye.
Bye.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.